We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 538. A lot better than last Sunday around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, huh, boys? Scott, Bob, what's up?
Yo, that's a series win. That's what that is. That is a series W. So that's the name of the game. These guys got to get back to square one, which apparently is hitting home runs. And when that happens,
banging,
take the series, figure the rest of this shit out later.
Yeah. People are disappointed. They didn't complete the sweep.
Come on, guys. They've looked like ass for the entire season so far.
16 games leading into the Cleveland series.
They just won three or four. They even took a lead, you know, went up, 3-0 in today's game. So is what it is. They took three or four. I'm happy with that. And yeah, it's good to see them to start swinging the bat a little bit better.
Yeah, I was thinking about as I was driving today, it was like, well, this was during the game and they had already won the three. It's like you would have signed up for a split in Cleveland, even though Cleveland's not the best of teams at this point. You're going to be facing Bieber in one of those games, and they have other good starting pitching. And with the way the Yankees were playing, every Yankees fan on planet Earth would have just been happy with a split, and they ended up with three or four. So yeah, fine. You can act like you're disappointed now that you didn't get the sweep, but no one in their wildest dreams thought they were going to win three out of four going into the series.
Well, the thing you look at is that the team that was worse in with runners in scoring position was Cleveland. So there was a team that was actually had an offense that was struggling even more than yours. So you'd think that you could go in and score more than, you know, the worst team that has the offense lower than yours, not executing as well as you are, which is terrible. So it was looking good. It was looking promising, I'd say, going into it. But Bieber was in the way for sure.
Yeah, and Cole obviously he stepped up to match Bieber and even better. I loved that they brought him out there at, I think it was 97 pitches. He went out there for the seventh inning, and that was a short bullpen because the three days in a row rule that Boone will not break, even though I mean that they Michael Kay was opining on the broadcast how that keeps the relievers healthy, but it doesn't keep them fresh for October when they seemingly are fried every October. But whatever.
As soon as we saw Bieber go 119 pitches, I think it was his career high.
Yeah, I think Francona just forgot he was still in the game.
No, Francona was just pushing. They were talking about this on the broadcast. I think they were exactly right. I think they were exactly spot on. Francona thinks that a Bieber with 117, 18 pitches is better than anybody in their bullpen. And that very well may be true.
That applies to Gerrit Cole as well.
It should apply to Gerrit Cole. Yes, absolutely. But as soon as he went to, 118 pitches and he was in the 115 range or whatever, Cole was just like staring at Boone.
Yeah. You're not taking me
dead,
out double digits.
Nuts stare. Like if you try, I'm going out. Doesn't matter what you say. I'm going out.
Well, I think it was definitely because of no Green and no Chapman. If both of those relievers were available, I think he comes out of that game. Do you agree with that?
No, I actually still think he was going to go out. But I think having him get over 100 pitches.
I know, but if you remember his last start out against Tampa, similar situation into the seventh inning, started it at 100 pitches, third time through the order, all the nerd stuff, and he gave up the lead. So yeah.
Different team, different circumstance, going up against Bieber.
I know that, but I have a hard time saying that if you had Chad Green rested and Aroldis Chapman rested, they're not, I think they're pulling Gerrit Cole. Maybe they let him go out there, start the inning.
Yeah, they have to give Chad Green his unclean inning.
Well, the thing that was like makes me scratch my head with the 3-day rule thing is that Chad Green on Thursday threw 10 pitches and then on Friday threw 8 pitches. So it's like, he threw 18 pitches over a 2-day span. You're telling me he can't pitch a third day in a row? And I know the B whips, right? You warm up, you get the humps. You get up, you get down. It's the entire thing, not necessarily the pitches in game. So fine.
That's it.
But he couldn't have been any more economical than 10-8 in two appearances. But nope, not gonna do it. And they stick to it. I mean, so Chapman and Green showed up to the ballpark knowing no matter what, I'm not pitching today. Right?
Yeah.
Like, is there a scenario you could envision where one of those guys pitched?
I mean, it would
15 innings, 16 innings, like, or okay, then fine.
Well, yeah.
Like,
I mean, if you're going,
is
if you're
Ford getting going to pitch again, or are they going to go to Chad Green?
I hope that they make the logical decision and they go to a Chad Green, identifying the circumstance of 8-10. But it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't, saying, we're in this routine, we're here for the long haul. At the end of the day, we're making sure that these guys are put in a position to win, and this is what we believe is the right way to go. But hey, look, it was a good weekend. The bullpen is, just continues to be lights out. It really does. It's been good, except for the one guy that I picked. Literally everybody has been good except for the one guy that I picked. So
that's okay.
I guess we got that out of the way quickly. I got four left. Let's go.
We both had a big swing and miss so far on our bullpen predictions, because you remember I said the bullpen's going to struggle more than the starting rotation this year. I mean, I kind of had a season-long prediction, and who knows, Nick Nelson could come back and be locked down next time he comes in. But yeah, quickly, some bullpen stats. Where they ranked in the league, and this was entering Sunday, they were fourth in innings pitched, first in relief pitcher war, first in ERA, first in FIP, second in expected FIP, and fifth in strikeouts per nine innings. And this is after losing Tommy Canley, Dellin Betances. Zach Britton is not pitching right now.
Dellin Betances has been gone for 2 years.
Has he?
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like he was just here.
No. It's been a while.
I guess so.
But Adam Ottavino was a big
loss. You get my point.
No, like no more frisbees across the plate that you were like, oh man, maybe we're going to lose something. How's he doing? I have not looked to see how he's doing. Is he
had a meltdown. He had a meltdown against Seattle the other day. So the bullpen was not, I don't want to say rebuilt, but it was definitely retinkered with. Darren O'Day, Justin Wilson were brought in, and Loaisiga has huge step up for him in obviously trust factor. I feel like that's a Boone term, right? Trust factor. Can you hear him saying that?
Absolutely. There's a circle. He's in it.
It's the Robert De Niro in the circle.
Circle of trust. Circle.
Yeah, I mean, he gets the four out save opportunity after Justin Wilson kind of lost the strike zone a little bit. And you know what? I think we have to go back to a mailbag a couple weeks ago and say we were wrong on something. Do you remember that Rugi Odor mailbag where the guy was like, I like how he comes into the mound and talks to pitchers? And we were he's probably just like learning signs. Susan Waldman and John Sterling, I'm not exaggerating today, spent 3.5 innings talking about how Rugi Odor is such a good teammate and how the everyone in the dugout loves that he goes to the mound and talks to guys, settle them down. So I think, hand up, we were wrong on that. Maybe Rugi Odor, glue guy, as Rich Kaufman tweeted. Rugi, glue. He's the glue with his bat drop home runs and all.
Yo, that is the fastest bat drop. It was like the reaction time of the bat drop with the speed of the Bob. Next time, if we could find some like exit velocity on the bat drop, because that had to have been highest in the
left in the league this year.
It was like elastic. It was pretty impressive how fast that thing got down.
We do need to get Statcast for that.
I agree. This needs to change. You know what? Aren't we using now? Are we using the TrackMan technology? We are now, right?
I don't think they're tracking bat flips and bat drops.
Well, they could. That's the beauty. They could.
What do you think is more offensive to a pitcher, a bat flip or a bat drop?
It's definitely the flip. There's so much more intention with the flip. Unless you're Trevor Bauer. I don't know if you heard this yet. His press conference last night.
I didn't hear his press. I saw the Tatis stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he was talking about that essentially, like, yeah, you want to celebrate let the guys celebrate. If they beat me, they can celebrate. Don't throw
If Trevor Bauer gets upset about a guy, acting cocky, then he's a complete hypocrite because
can't do it. I mean, he has to say this.
He does the McGregor walk when he strikes someone out. It's like you can't do that and then get pissed off when you give up a home run and a guy mocks you. Like, no.
At the same time. I'm good with the changes, you know, like the old school part of me in that respect is out the window. Give me the celebrations.
Against the celebrations?
I mean, the showing up sometimes. Yeah, I guess I was.
Consider showing up?
I mean, a bat flip is certainly showing up, but they don't, I don't think the players consider it I don't think they consider it today a show up of the pitcher necessarily more so than just literally a celebration. Whereas, it's just a different mentality. I think the different mentality of the different eras of baseball, because it was never done. So if anything was done in the 90s, if anything was done, or even before the 90s, before the home run ball started, then you're getting thrown at. So it just wasn't in the game.
Yeah. I mean, we obviously weren't watching the game, so we don't know. But I think in the 90s, there was not as much. There was a little pimpage, though. Like some, like, I feel like if now... Back then, we didn't think of the Sammy Sosa hop when he hit a home run as anything more than just Sammy being Sammy. But, like, don't you think now in today's, you know, PC culture, people would be like, oh, that Sammy Sosa hop is showing up the pitcher?
No, because I don't think today's age, they don't care about it. That's the beauty of this. Like, look at Tatis.
You always have your people on Twitter that care.
Tatis throws the bat 97 feet in the air on every home run. Like, the guy is just, he's just he's electricity. He's out there just trying to have put on a show, and I'm fine with it. Baseball needs something. Let's do that instead of changing the game itself.
Let's get some NFL celebrations in there. Some like rowing the boat, four guys just rowing the boat. And
like, we've seen the grenade at home plate. They've done that. We've seen some team celebrations at home plate.
Dancing.
But yeah, what if they all just jump in and do the NFL, like taking a picture pose at home plate?
I thought exactly NFL, though, did they get rid of the team celebration penalty?
In football?
In football. It used to be if you celebrate with your team.
I think it's still there.
Team,
I just don't think they activate it as much. But they, on the kickoff, and every kickoff's a touchback anyway, so who cares? What's the difference?
Exactly.
That's true. Yeah, so just to get quickly back to the bullpen and Johnny Loaizaga, where do you rank him in the pecking order now?
I mean, he's up there, man. Like he's behind Chad Green.
Is he third behind Chad Green?
Yeah, for now. I think for now. I think when Britton gets back, then we're going to see, you know, we'll see the order go back to the way it was. But Loaiza, again, going with that, those two pitches, just dominating with those two pitches, and just you know, the fastball changeup. That is what I want from him. I want to see him be dominant in an inning. You know, four outs, one inning. It is what it is. But I want him in shorter stints because I think he can definitely be dominant. He's got the stuff. You know, Cole was talking in a press conference about him afterwards, just praising the way he's attacking the zone. And that's what we saw from him. And that's, I think, what we expected when he came up from the minor leagues. The guy did not throw balls. The guy threw a ton of strikes, didn't walk anybody. And I think, you know, over it's been a couple of years now since he's been up, he's definitely struggled with his command a bit. But I think we're starting to see now a comfortable Johnny Loaiza. And when you get a guy like that who's got he's got really good stuff. His fastball is electric. That changeup is good. When you see a guy like that hit that comfort level, I think that's when you start seeing good stuff. And again, I don't like him as much as in a two inning role. I love him in a one inning role.
It's crazy though, because he was a starter in the minor leagues, and that's just completely gone now. I don't think there's any more thoughts of him being anything but a short reliever.
Just shows you the difference, right? I mean, you can have two pitches and maybe like a shitty third one in the minor leagues and be okay and probably dominate. But in the majors, you better damn well have at least that third pitch, probably a fourth even, but unless you're a guy like Garrett Cole who doesn't necessarily need a fourth pitch, but most guys do. So hell of a lot harder when you take that next step.
Do you remember when the Yankees signed Chapman to the long deal and you and I, Scott, were like, he's going to have to do something other than throw 104 miles an hour by the end of this contract or else it's just going to get ugly. And by God, he's doing that. Because this splitter looks filthy and he's allowed no runs in his 7 innings, 17 strikeouts in 7 innings. He's using the splitter 12% of the time. But I think more importantly than that, he's using the splitter 12% is that it's actually a good pitch, because he was starting to use his slider more, but I never felt confident whenever Chapman had to throw a slider. It wasn't a good slider. It was like an okay enough slider to play off 101 mile an hour fastball. But he hung it in the plate so often. He hung it in the middle of the plate to Jose Altuve. That's why he hit it 400 feet. But the splitter is actually a good pitch. And that's what's making him next level right now.
And what it does is it plays better to his game. You know, that slider that's hung up in the zone is on a tee. You throw a splitter that's heavy and you get the movement that he's getting right now. I mean, it's hard to get that ball in the air. So I think it's a direct adjustment for what has been, you know, plaguing him over the past few years in the playoffs when they need him the most. And he's give him a lot of credit for developing this pitch and really being able to come out and execute it as well. He's looked better than, I mean, I think now he looks better with this splitter than he's even looked when he's thrown 104, 105, whatever it is, miles per hour, because he's not just blowing guys away. He's pitching and that's nasty, because he's still climbing in the triple digits. So it's not like he can't throw the ball hard anymore. He can still throw the ball very hard. And now he's got this bottom out splitter that's just devastating.
Paul O'Neill reminded me that the Reds briefly were considering using him as a starting pitcher when they signed him. And I just completely forgot about that. It's been so long since he came into the league, but I forgot that he I think there was like, they didn't know, is he a reliever? Is he a starting pitcher? And I just can't imagine him being a starting pitcher.
Yeah, early days, man. I mean, Mariano was a starting pitcher too. So I think at some point, a lot of these guys come up as such and you're trying to, you see this talent and you're like, man, well, if we can pretend, this is kind of like Ohtani. Like I eventually see if he stays as a pitcher, he's a bullpen guy, but you see the ability and you're like, man, maybe we could get a few more innings out of this. Maybe we could get, you know, a starting pitcher out of this. It just becomes, the reality comes and smacks them in the face sooner than later.
Do you agree that Shohei Ohtani is the most exciting player in baseball? Like, that's a common thing now. I feel like every time he hits a home run, has to be mentioned. Ohtani, look at this.
No, it's Fernando miles an hour. It's Fernando Tatis Jr. is the most exciting player in baseball, hands down.
Scott, earlier you kind of joked that the Yankees are back to their ways of only scoring via the home run. That's what happened on Saturday. They won the game. That's what happened on Sunday. They lost the game. It is still a concern, though, that even though they did take 3 out of 4, they're hitting more home runs. Great. Boone talking about banging. Like, this is how this team is going to win a lot of games. But you also, I guess, for the Shane Bieber start, you throw it out because he's so good. It's like, okay, if all you could muster is two solo home runs off Shane Bieber, fine. But this guy, McKenzie, today, especially early in the game, all over the place. And they left the bases loaded in the first inning, couldn't get a hit. So it's just, it's like, yeah, they scored the three runs on home runs, but they had opportunities to score far more.
They did. They were not executing like they should have. We still got guys up and down the lineup with massive slumps. I mean, at this point, your left fielder is who? Because there's not anybody who is playing worth a damn besides Clint Frazier making Superman catches in the outfield. But Brett Gardner at this point, like that argument, it means nothing at this point. You're lefty, righty, you know, it's not like any one of these guys are playing well.
He's won for his last 21. Well.
Yeah. So
Gardner is.
So yeah, of course, these guys still have to get going. You know, we got some, Stanton looks like he's getting back on. I mean, he hit the hardest ball in baseball this year.
I'm sorry, every year he hits the hardest ball.
But it was a ground ball to the second base side. It was a base hit. That's my point. Like he's making better contact. He's not just, you know, going for moon shoes and trying to hit the ball to into outer space. He's making good contact. We're starting to see that the mix up in the lineup a little bit, throwing Stanton in that two spot, Judge in the three. Like, it's fine. You know, again, we talked about this the last, like, does it matter at this point? No, we just got to get these guys going again. Just get these guys going again, mix it up and keep going. It's fine. I don't care. Whatever works.
Don't you think that's the reason they're having Stanton in the two spot is to try to get him going?
Of course. Absolutely. There's no doubt. You know, he's got Judge behind him now, which is a little bit more protection than anybody else in the lineup. So yeah, you're theoretically getting better pitches at that point. So yes, I like that.
When Stanton hit the 57, 59 home runs, whatever it was with the Marlins, he hit second that year.
Cool. If that's what we got to do to get him going again, hit him second. I don't care. I just want to see production. If that's what it takes, then please do it.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain. I don't really care either. Because if Stanton's hitting and Judge is hitting, like doesn't matter if they're 2-3, 3-4, whatever it is, it's like fine by me. It's just, it's been three games in a row. I don't know. Maybe I think he's going to stick with it for a while, ride it out, see how it goes.
I think at this point, he should. He should absolutely. When you actually have something working relatively well compared to the rest of the season, go with that and ride that out and try to get some momentum there. Do you think DJ LeMahieu is not going to complain about it? Judge is not going to complain about it. There's not very many people that will. So I think it's a good thing.
You mentioned we don't know who the left fielder is. Clint Frazier is obviously not the starter anymore. He's in a platoon. Brett Gardner's won for his last 21. Mike Talkman was out there today. But I think Clint Frazier is just not being aggressive enough early in counts. He's taking way too many quality strikes. Just looking at the pitches, not just for strike threes, which he's done a number of times, but it's just he's always 0-1, 0-2. He's taking pitches in the middle of the plate early in the zone, and maybe he wants to be more patient. Maybe he listened to you about his .396 on base percentage and he thinks he needs to be an on base guy. But I think of him as an aggressive in the zone guy. Same with Gleyber Torres. Aggressive in the zone. Swing at good pitches and you're gonna do damage. I don't want you walking. I want you swinging the bat and making hard contact, Clint. Same goes for Gleyber Torres. Be aggressive at good pitches.
Yeah, totally agree. He's definitely fallen behind, staring way too much at fastballs over the middle. The middle of the plate early in the count. So yeah, agreed. He needs to be more aggressive. He needs to use that bat speed early in the count, because what's happening is he is getting down and he's even still at that point looking at pitches because he's not seeing the ball well. He's just, I don't know what that is, but he doesn't look comfortable up there. And if it's because he's, you know, being too non-aggressive in the beginning and he's trying to work the count and get better pitches, it's not working. So he needs to go back to the instincts, go back to, attacking, just like you're saying. O'Neill was talking about him, over the weekend, just about mechanically looking like he's a little out front. So that very well could be. I think for him, he's got so much ability to stay back. Because of his bat speed and because of his wrists, he should be staying back on the ball and being able to make adjustments. And he's definitely not doing that right now. So I don't know what, I think at some point we're going to see him just come out just like gangbusters. And once he starts seeing the ball well, he's going to be lighting the world on fire, but has not happened yet. Still, we're still waiting on that. And he keeps getting, you know, to Boone's credit, we've been shitting on Boone all year long. I'll give him some credit, at least in my eyes. I like the moves. the pinch hitting Frazier, even when he's struggling and you're getting a guy in there for a different look, it's a different type of situation, which could help a guy, I think, especially a guy like Frazier. Like I'm fine throwing him into a pressure situation, even if he's struggling in a pinch hitting spot. Cause to me, it just changes Gardner's it up a little bit.
Not giving you good at bats right now.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But
like, you know, people are looking at his numbers and like, why are we putting a guy that's, you know, one for the
century? Look at the guy who's up right now. It's like, yeah.
Everybody around them is trash when you're looking at the streaks and where they are in their current, and their, you know, their last 30 at bats. Might as well throw him into a different situation, see if the different type of pressure can help him out. Who knows? Mix-ups like that is a good thing.
I liked the pinch hitting. What did you think of Boone's move to pinch run Talkman for Clint Frazier on a 3-2 count?
The 3-2 count, I don't
like
understand.
What? I don't get it. Like, if you're going to pinch, first of all, is Mike Talkman that much faster than Clint Frazier where him running on a 3-2
He's better
pitch?
On the bases. He's not faster. He's better on the bases. He's a better base runner.
I agree. So then why not pinch run him to start? Because he's going to go in for defense anyway. So if he's that much better on the base paths, why not pinch run him on a 0-0 count?
Because he forgot.
Okay.
Because he forgot.
Okay.
He's like, get Talkman out there. 3-2 Talkman, count. We can still do this.
He needed to tie his shoes and like he wasn't ready. And by the 3-2 pitch, he was able to get out there. It's just like
maybe Talkman reminded him. He's like, maybe I shouldn't remind him that he told me I was going to run for him if he gets on base. It's like the Little League kid. Like, coach, you said I was going to run for Flint.
Everyone has to get in the game.
Remember, I got my helmet. I'm ready to go. Got my helmet.
Do you remember back in the day in your backyard? I don't know if either of you did this, but you would practice diving catches.
Never practice diving catches.
Oh, I would. I would throw the ball up. Go ahead, Bo.
I would practice on my couch. I'd run and jump like a diving catch on my couch. And that's how I got a lot of my reps in.
I would throw the ball up in the backyard and I would run and I would dive for the ball and catch it. And yeah, I just mangle my knees. But that's, I feel like, what Clint Frazier has done his entire life. Superman diving catches. And like, he practices, how do I look the coolest while diving for a baseball? And do you remember O'Neill talking on the broadcast when Clint Frazier was diving for a ball? And he said he dives unorthodox in the sense that he dives right at the ball with his shoulders square.
Yes.
When a lot of guys will dive like off a little bit. So you get like a different angle to it. But Frazier's just like, I'm going, like he's diving into a pool, shoulders square to the ball. Let's go, baby. I'm just going to land on my stomach on the ground and it's going to look awesome. I feel like that's Clint Frazier's goal, is I want this to look awesome. I don't care if I catch it. It's going on social media.
He's all about swag.
It's the swag. There's no doubt about it. Clint Frazier has that in the back of his mind. He's got to look good. And to his credit, he's practiced well. The shit looks good. That shit looks good. It looks like Superman flying through the air. And some of them are very unnecessary. He's definitely an unnecessary diver at times, especially coming in on a ball. I'm like, bro, you could have caught that.
That's
probably
the hardest
around your knees.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that definitely O'Neill is talking about, where he squares up to it there because he doesn't actually need to, but he knows. He knows just what to do to like make it look like it's maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but it looked good. So that's good. That's fine. Look, I can't say anything about Clint Frazier's defense after he made everybody shut the F up last year. After he couldn't catch a ball in right field, pouted about it, left the stadium, didn't want to talk. Maybe it was a better move for him to not talk than to talk, to be honest. But ever since then, 2020, the man showed up. So I give him a lot of credit and I give him a 10 on his dives.
So what are they going to do in the outfield? Because Hicks didn't play today because he's sore back. Like, this could be one day or it could be 100 days. Who knows with Aaron Hicks? Like, man hits a home run and it's like, oh, pulled my back muscle on the home run. But what are they going to do now? Because Gardner's not playing. He's not having good at-bats. So just give Clint a shot to work out of this, right? Like, don't you have to just give him the rest of the road trip, start him all four games, get him 20 at-bats, and just be like, hopefully he snaps out of this. Like, I'm sorry, Gardner's going to be there. He's going to be there. I don't need him to snap out of it. He'll be fine as the fourth outfielder. I need Clint Frazier to snap out of it.
I mean, I still agree to this point. I still don't like the fact that they're not allowing him to work through it. I mean, I understand at some point you have to see something else, right? You have to mix it up and see something else because it's been as bad as it has been with him. But unfortunately, it's everybody else too. So yes, you're playing Baltimore and Detroit. These are two very, very good opportunities to see, you know, pitching that's not going to be better than league average. You know, Means, I'd say, is above league average potentially, but everybody else.
Matt Harvey on Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, come on. We need to get some Red Thunder going up against the Dark Knight and see what happens here. And I think it's a great opportunity for him to hopefully feel good. Glaber, great opportunity for him to get his ticket and the mayoral candidate back in Baltimore. He's owned Baltimore. This is a place that the Yankees need to hit. So yeah, this is a great opportunity, and I do hope that. I do not want to see Brett Gardner hitting in Camden Yards. I want to see everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, because Gardner's going to be Gardner for the rest of the year, and he's going to... It's just not worth getting him at bats right now.
Breaking news.
Oh, what do we got?
Miguel Andujar has been reinstated from the 10-day injured list and is now optioned to the alternate site. Okay. Luke Voit also is back at the alternate site, right? So we got some sticks coming.
Yeah, I figure they're going to wait to get Andujar. So May 4th is when the AAA season starts. I think both of those players are going to get Voit will have maybe 3 games rehab, but I think Andujar, they're going to give him at least 2 weeks before they call him up, unless we have another bad injury, right?
I mean, they're playing spring training. They're playing games against other teams right now too. They're getting active at bats, but that's an active at bat. You're going against somebody. I mean, shit, they were throwing at Florio the other day. I saw, I think it was Connor Foley's tweet. They're playing games, so I don't think it needs to go along with the with the start of the season necessarily. I think they're getting active reps that are good enough for sure. So it would not surprise me if Andujar was up at some point in the near future if he got a few at bats and felt good. He's a guy that I want in the lineup soon. If they're still struggling, if this continues, like, that's a guy that goes bat to ball. Like, that's a good person to have in the lineup.
Yeah, where does he play?
I don't know. We'll figure that out.
No, but no, seriously, where does he play? Because Stan's the DH.
Stan's the DH, then would not be surprised if they put Andujar in left field for a day. Would not be surprised if they flexed over Gio to short, put Andujar third. I don't know how many. It depends, I guess, what kind of reps he's getting down in the alternate side as well. You know, like, where are they thinking he's going to be contributing potentially on defense, because he's got to get some reps. So if it's in the outfield, if you can hide him in left field, then do it.
Okay. Indulge me for 2 seconds. 5 starts for Gerrit Cole. Higgy, 4 catching appearances with Cole. Sanchez, 1. So the opening day was just for show, and Higgy's his personal catcher. Moving on. Jordan Montgomery. I thought that Aaron Boone was going to let Jordan Montgomery pitch through the 5th inning, but he went to Lickie. Another lefty, taking out a lefty for another lefty, fine. I think Monty had 89 pitches. Most of those came, or not most, but he had a long first inning. But I don't know. I thought he was going to let him work through it. He didn't. What'd you think of that move to pull him?
I was surprised. Montgomery was surprised. Montgomery was pissed. He definitely wanted to get, there were 2 outs in the inning, weren't there?
Yeah. So you need 1 more out.
Yeah. You bring in another lefty as well.
Yep.
It's interesting. You know, not the most encouraging start. I would have liked to see Boone stay with him, allowed him to get that out. He was going much better at that point. And also, you know, after the horrible beginning, after the horrible start, he fought back and pitched well, I think, and showed, you know, showed that moxie, showed that exactly what you want to see from a 3-4 guy. And to not allow him to get that out, because he would have gotten the win as well. It's just, I don't know. If I'm Montgomery, I don't have the confidence of my manager to get that final out after I've battled back at this point to get the win, or, you know, to at least qualify for a win here. I think that matters with some of these guys. Boone should have stayed with him. It worked, but
I think, taking Cole out of the equation, so we're talking about the rest of the starting pitchers, unless it's going perfectly for them, they're not going to push them through anything. It has to go perfectly for them to pitch five or six innings. Like, no runners on base, not a close game, low pitch count, not third time through the order. Like, all the stars have to align for a starting pitcher not named Gerrit Cole to go six innings or even into the fifth inning.
I mean, into the fifth inning is a stretch, but yeah. What are you talking about?
Most of their starts this year for all these guys are less than five innings. Do you realize that? Like, Kluber hasn't pitched into the fifth inning. Taillon pitched into the fifth inning once. He pitched four innings today. Montgomery pitched six innings into the sixth inning once, but he's had short
starts. Didn't Montgomery pitch into the seventh for one of his starts?
Okay, maybe. But like, it's not a couple. It's a lot of like four and a third, four and two-thirds.
Montgomery's the guy behind that I think has the ability to go much deeper into games. And when you see him struggle as much as he did and then fight back, I want him leaving feeling good as well. And I thought he deserved to try to get that last out.
I'm totally with you. And I thought that was the time that he was going to let him do it because he talked to him. Normally Boone will just immediately signal for the
bullpen. He could tell that he was pissed. You could tell the look. I mean, he was shoving his glove in his face. He was not happy about it.
What is that conversation?
I mean, it was just he was just giving him some attaboys is what it was. Like, this isn't you. I don't know, whatever the bullshit that Boone is saying, but he's trying to attaboy him. Like, one, it doesn't matter what, you know, the stats don't matter. You fought back, proud of you, blah, 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 blah. We're going to have Lucas get this last out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I don't think you can get this last out.
David Cone has talked about how he could talk Joe Torre into leaving him into games. And I just feel like there's not that anymore in the game. Right? Gerrit Cole's not talking Boone into leaving him in the game. Gerrit Cole is dictating that he's, you know what I'm saying? Like Cole's
what about when
like,
Pax, yeah. What about when Paxton stayed in the game was that?
That was the playoff game. I think that was Boone's decision before he even walked out of the dugout.
He was just trying to get the rise of the crowd.
Yeah, I think that was all for show. That was all showmanship.
It worked.
I think if there was any decision, if there's any question,
so big, I was so hyped. And then my throat was in my nuts because it looked like it was gone.
How sad is it that the most hype moment of that playoff run was leaving a pitcher in longer than we thought he was going to be left in? That's Yankees baseball, baby.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? We've all gone through a lot over the past year plus with COVID. Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in your area, and it's available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living happier today. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily to see for yourself. Visit betterhelp.com/bronx21. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. We have a great special offer for our listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/bronx21. One more time, betterhelp.com/bronx21. Next up, we've got Bob the Intern's segment, our favorite segment of the Monday episode. Take it away, Bob.
All right. This week, we got a bit of a different one. So this week's segment is called On the Fence. And basically, I've come up with four over-unders or player versus player picks for you guys to make for the upcoming week. And I'll also be posting a poll on Twitter so everyone else can partake as well.
If we do these if we do these throughout the season, like you got to keep tally of who wins.
I'm definitely going to.
Okay.
I'm making a document. So the first one is, will the Yankees win over or under 4.5 games throughout the week, which includes a 4-game series against the O's and a 3-game series against the Tigers?
I'll go first. I think they will and have to win over 4.5 games, and that's 3 out of 4. Against Baltimore, and that's 2 out of 3 against Detroit. Anything less than those two is a huge disappointment against these bad teams.
Smash the over. I need some air horns. Pam, 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 pam. Smash the over. They're going to dominate the Orioles. They're going to, and they're going to dominate the Tigers. Definitely over.
You've got one more loss, you realize.
I know I have one more loss. That's why we're going to sweep.
Okay.
So cool. The next one is, will the Yankees score over or under 27.5 runs by the end of the weekend? So both series combine all the runs the Yankees have scored. Is it going to be 28 or more?
So I'll go first this time. That's four per game, right? 7 games. My math is 28. Yeah, I'm smashing the over again.
You're confident smashing that over?
Smashing the over. We're going to Camden Yards. Are you kidding me? If we don't score 40 runs, it's going to be a disappointment.
Okay. I will take the under on this just because I'm not super confident and I want to be different so we can have some actual.
Good. You want to be wrong. I'm glad you did that.
I just don't know why you're like, what has this offense shown you that you're confident they're going to score consistently?
They've started to hit home runs and they're going to Camden Yards. That's it.
Okay.
Keep in mind,
I'm not confident in my pick. I just don't think you should be as confident in your pick.
Don't tell me. Don't talk to me about my confidence level. It's high. It's very high. You were going to say the average of the runs per game.
Yeah, the Yanks are averaging around 3.5 runs per game so far.
Right.
So that's less than 28. Yeah, they've been terrible. So it's a matter of if the offense will continue to kick up or not.
I mean, if you're telling me
Orioles pitching,
they'll probably have a game or two in Baltimore where they score like a ton of runs. But then I'm also not so sure they're not going to have a game where they score one run.
Okay, we'll see what happens.
We will see what happens. So the next one is, who do you think will record more hits this week, Aaron Judge or DJ LeMahieu?
I said this last week and you just poo-pooed me, Scott. DJ LeMahieu has not looked good. He's not looking good. He's rolling over on balls to the shortstop and the third baseman. He's hitting soft ground balls. He doesn't look good.
Okay, so what's your answer?
I will say that Aaron Judge will have more hits this week than DJ LeMahieu.
This is going great for me.
He needs to snap out of it, but I haven't seen anything for him to snap out of it. So far this year, Judge is hitting .266, DJ's .259. And DJ's hits it's been a lot of dribblers in the infield that have gone for hits for him.
Okay. DJ LeMahieu all day. DJ LeMahieu is the correct answer.
Give me one reason why.
Because DJ LeMahieu is the batting champion. That's why. And we're playing let me remind you again, we're playing the Orioles and the Tigers.
Judge murders the Orioles.
You're right. He does. He's going to have more RBIs probably. He'll probably drive in more runs. The production will be there for sure. DJ will be a run scorer.
Are you at least admitting that DJ has not looked good?
Yeah, I've said this. I think it's an early slump for DJ LeMahieu. I'm not worried about it at all. Like, at all. Not even a little tiny, even a little bit. And I think Aaron Judge is, yeah, absolutely will feast. But I think this is going to be a team feast in Camden Yards.
Nice. So the last one is, who will record more strikeouts? Devy Garcia, who is starting tomorrow against the O's, or Corey Kluber, who is expected to take the mound on Tuesday?
This is, so I'll go first on this one. I'm taking Devy Garcia because I don't think Kluber is getting a lot of strikeouts at all. I mean, he's not looking like he's missing many bats. He's not confusing guys. It's Devy Garcia because, I think he's going to be fired up. They haven't really seen him. I don't know if he's gotten a start against the Orioles or not. It's been a minute, but Devy Garcia, I think it's probably by 2 or 3.
Here's the only thing with Garcia. It's like, are they going to actually let him start, or is he opening?
Yeah, that's the only difference. If I'm screwed, if obviously he's not throwing, 4 to 5 innings. If he's on the level playing field here and he's able to start a game like a normal pitcher, then yes, he's going to have more strikeouts.
I think that Garcia is the right answer, but I also would not be shocked if Garcia is a one-time through the order opener.
Yeah, it's just tough for me to see that against the Baltimore Orioles, man. It's like, if they do that shit, it's pretty ridiculous. He's stretched out. Is he not? He's stretched out.
Yeah, he's ready to go. He's thrown like 80 pitches.
Okay. That's stretched out to me. That's not an opener. That's not a guy that you're gonna go out and waste for an inning or two. That's not what that is. This is a guy that they need to start.
I hope so. But you know them and their chicanery with these bullpen opener situations. It's like every time you think we have them figured out, they do something silly.
So what are you picking? Are you picking Kluber?
I already said I'm picking Devy Garcia, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's an opener situation with Garcia and that could negate it. Although he could still pitch one inning, strikeout three, and Kluber ends up with 2 strikeouts because the dude's not missing bats right now.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
Let's do mailbags. Bob, take it away again.
So I, yeah, so this, you can this week
Bob,
I did.
I'm splitting them up with you, man. I see the amount of text that's happening in these mailbags, and I appreciate that from everybody who's listening. I'm not gonna leave you on an island like this, though. I'm gonna help you out.
Yeah, I mean, I also disabled my Siri this week, so there shouldn't be any Siri problem going in my ear. I'll read the first one though. It's from Sean. He said, hope you guys are doing well outside of the Gong Show that is the New York Yankees. I came to a revelation recently, and it is the Yankees' business model seems to revolve around being consistently good, but never really great. Even in the years where they've made the postseason, they almost always run into a team who either has a better lineup, pitching staff, or both. The defense I've heard from fans is that the Yankees are trying to win multiple championships instead of just one. What some fans that defend the Yankees for this process don't understand is that it only works if you have a constant pipeline through your minor league system that prevents you from having to extend players like Aaron Hicks, who throughout his career has been no better than okay. Therefore, there was no way for the Yankees could guarantee themselves a long window of success unless the player's development was on point. They don't have a young core anymore, and even the youngest position player on the team, Gleyber Torres, has shown no signs of regression. Has shown signs of regression. Yeah. It would have been nice for them to go with a heightened urgency in 2018, 2019, because the team seems worse now than it was then. I know it's only 15 games, but I feel like it's the start of a decline and decay of a new age group of Yankees. And I'm very depressed thinking about it. Are my thoughts and feelings valid, or should I stay off the weed?
I don't think Sean's wrong in the sense that the team feels like it's declined from 18-19.
Well, there's a couple things here. They exceeded expectations. I've talked about expectations 1,000 times here, but in 17, they weren't 16 even when a lot of these guys came up, they weren't supposed to do what they did. 17, they weren't supposed to go as far as they went. I mean, they were damn near, they actually were close to the World Series at that point. So when you start to see regression, certainly it's happened in the postseason, right? We haven't gotten as far as they got in 2017. So there is an actual regression on the team level. If you look at just what you've accomplished in the playoffs, because that's what matters. So certainly there's regression. And yes, they're getting older. You're not seeing the same numbers that you've seen from these guys in their first couple of years. So I think that there was an expectation that these guys were going to just after 17, just take off and win multiple championships at that point. And I think that was not a wrong thing to think either, because when you have a bunch of young guys who also had won in the minor leagues together, they had that, like, the kumbaya, there was a lot of good synergy happening. Construction felt good in 17 with some of the older veterans as well. Going into 18, you felt like they had the experience. They felt like they were able to take that next step, and it's just not happened. It's just not happened. So yeah, these are very natural feelings, and definitely this 2-year window where we're going to have to start re-signing guys with Boone and then Cashman also, it's important. It's an important window.
Yeah, and these are the years that we're supposed to be Gleyber Torres blossoming into a superstar, and he's seemingly regressing. I know it's early for him, but he had a bad 2020, and it's just like we're supposed to see him taking off, not flattening out.
Definitely. I mean, I think that goes across with a few guys. I mean, Aaron Judge, so far this year, so good, but hasn't been able to stay on the field. Stanton has regressed based on the guy that we thought we were getting. We know what Gary Sanchez has.
Quickly
regressed.
On Stanton, people were disappointed with his 2018. Do you realize he played 150 games, hit 38 home runs, and had how many home runs did he hit? He had a 138 WRC plus. It just like he had a great season in 2018. It just wasn't MVP, and people are like disappointed. And now look where he is. It's crazy.
Well, I think I'm not even speaking about 2018, but more so, kind of where he is. And I think the expectations for him still are massive, right? I mean, we know the end of that contract is going to be dog shit, and we're going to be eating horrible. Either he's not going to be playing, not going to be on the team, or the Yankees are just going to be, doing what they did with A-Rod and eating the money.
He played 158 games. A lot of them were at DH, but a good amount of them were also in the field. He hit 38 home runs. He had 100 RBIs. He scored 100 runs. He had 4.3 WAR and a 128 WRC plus. Okay? Like, that is an all-star caliber player. And since then, he can't stay on the field. He can't make contact with pitches. He hasn't produced anything more than 0.4 WAR in a season. And he can't play the field. So, what happened?
I don't know. That's kind of the point here. You have the superstar guys with long contracts, and then you have the younger guys who are getting into those meat years where you're supposed to get really good value because of arbitration, and you don't have to sign them yet, and they're just not taking advantage of those years, and that's a problem. That's what needed to happen. That's how you bolster. That's how you make a run and you get multiple championships. Can't do it when they're all ready for a contract, because it's just not going to happen.
All right, you want me to read Duncan?
I can get this one. Hey guys, this is from Duncan. Hey guys, I'm a UK Yankees fan who really started following in 2017 after taking in a game at the stadium. Being a fairly recent covert,
convert.
I don't always understand some of the thinking in baseball, especially behind the scenes. I'm a lifelong soccer fan supporting Aston Villa via. Totally butchered that, I'm sure. In the English Premier League, also followed by Prince William, Tom Hanks, and the janitor from Harry Potter. Did not know that. And I can't help relating the Yankees to current situation to any of the top soccer teams where the managers take the fall for consistent underperformance. Boone would no longer be in a job, having 3 full seasons with limited success, playing tactics which clearly aren't working, and having a roster which he doesn't seem to know how to deploy in the best way. The team as a whole looks out of form, negative, and seems totally unable to motivate themselves. A soccer phrase is, he has lost the dressing room, which would be clubhouse. Lost the dressing room. They are not playing for him. They are not playing for him. He would be gone in a shot. Would it not be best for the Yankees organization to make the change now so that they have a different mindset coming in with at the top with new energy, new processes, and to re-energize the players?
We've talked about this a lot. It's just, think about the Yankees since 1996. Okay, Boone is the third manager since 1996. That is incredible consistency in your manager. Teams do not do that. Even successful teams do not have managers that last a decade plus. The Red Sox have churned through managers. The Mets go through like 9 managers every 3.5 years. Other teams are hiring and firing guys. Even I think the only other kind of organization you can compare it to is the Angels, because Mike Socha was there for just forever. But they only won one championship under Mike Socha. So I just think the Yankees, after George Steinbrenner stopped making all the decisions, the new Steinbrenners, Hal Steinbrenner and Brian Cashman, they believe you need consistency at the top instead of volatility at the top. I'm not saying they're wrong, but I'm also not saying they're right. You know, sometimes you have to cut the cord when you think it's the right time to cut the cord. And I think with Boone, if he doesn't win this year, if they flame out in the playoffs again, meaning they don't win the pennant, okay, if they get to the World Series, you're not moving on from him. But if they don't win the pennant again, and it's the same old shit with this team, I think you seriously have to consider moving on, because you don't have long with this team where you have to win a World Series, and Boone might just not be the guy.
Yeah, so I'm going to read Lee Jones's mailbag too, because it goes right into this. He said, hey guys, that includes you too, Bob. See, here we go. I love the inclusivity.
Let's go, I love
here.
It.
I know that this is sheer fantasy, but indulge me. If the Yankees were to fire Boone and you could replace him with whomever you wanted, no restrictions whatsoever, who would you replace him with? So
my dad.
Let's play it out. Besides your dad, besides Roastmaster Rick, who are you making? Look, I have a hard time.
Hard to come up with names.
Well, I have a name, but it's not one. If I'm looking around the league, I'm not pulling somebody off. So he said no restrictions, but I'm gonna change the game a little bit. Someone who could be realistic, you know, coming in, you change the game for what the Yankees are doing. I think you go back to a guy that can, yes, motivate, but also has the ability and proven that he can win as well, who has shown that. I think that the relatability could still be there even with this guy. My guy is Willie Randolph, who deserves another shot in the major leagues. Yankee ties.
He's been out of the game a long time,
but he's also one that is, he's not so ingrained in the old school ways.
How do you know that?
Because I've heard him talk about, he will, and to be very clear, anybody who comes into the Yankees organization is going to have some capacity and be able to use the analytics and use them in the game and be able to use them appropriately deemed by the Yankees. If they felt comfortable in that way, which again, I could, Willie Randolph is a student of the game. It would not surprise me if he would adapt a lot of the different things in certain ways. But he's a guy that people love. You know, the Yankee fans, I think, have a very good relationship with Willie Randolph. Players, I think, have a good relationship with Willie Randolph. He's a Yankee guy. Just if there's one name that would excite me, it would be him.
So the Red Sox and the
Yankees. He deserves another goddamn chance too. I don't know what after the Mets job.
I think it might be too long. I think he's been out of the game so long they've just forgotten about. There's just too many.
I don't think he's new wave candidates. I think he was not put up for managerial jobs for some reason. I don't know why.
The Yankees and the Red Sox both hired new managers in 2018. Cora with the Red Sox, Boone with the Yankees. What was the key difference there? Is that Cora had in dugout experience, right?
In and dugout think, experience, but not managerial experience.
Okay, but in dugout experience, being a bench coach on a major league team.
Yeah.
No, I know that. That's I think, goes a long way. Boone came out of the ESPN booth. Okay.
They're also very different types of managers also. I mean, you can't,
my
it's hard
point
to compare
is
the two
that
at all.
I think it's hard to give the keys to Boone. The Yankees were a Ferrari coming off the 2017 season. Okay. They gave the keys to Boone and he didn't know how to drive stick. He didn't know the simplest of things of managing baseball games. Yeah. He could relate to players in the clubhouse, supposedly. He apparently impressed the Yankees with his knowledge of analytics, but he didn't have the most fundamental of skills, and that was managing baseball game experience. And that's important. Just because you played baseball, just because you've called baseball, just because you watch baseball, just because you play MLB The Show, doesn't mean you can manage a baseball game and manage a baseball team.
Yeah, so let me ask you a question. And I don't even remember talking about this, but and to me, it's a very dumb question when you think about it. But isn't teaching someone the ability to say yes or no to the nerds who prepare everything in the analytics side of it easier to learn and to like rally around than actual baseball experience and like the things that you need to only learn from being there and it being in situations? Like the analytical side of baseball, a lot of it is given to you. You don't have to know it. It's just given to you.
Yeah, but you still have to make decisions in games.
Okay. So you know that they're coming. You know, I mean, this is something that can be learned I think pretty quickly. I don't think this is something that needs to be.
How many times have we seen Aaron Boone make really questionable managerial decisions? I'm talking about tactical game situation. We just talked about one.
My point is it's easier the other way. It's easier the other way is my point. In-game stuff is hard.
So you're agreeing with me?
I'm saying that I don't know why we're looking at a guy that can know analytics as well, because he's getting, somebody can learn that. Willie Randolph can learn that. The nerds will hand him the same spreadsheets Boone is getting.
The analytics people fear that if you hire a quote unquote baseball man, he's going to deny the analytics and go rogue and make the gut decisions that they don't want them to be making.
Right. And that's where that happy medium needs to come in. But my point is you can still have the influence of the analytics, even with a baseball guy. That can happen. If the guy is open to it. If he's not open to it, then sure, you make a decision there. But you can certainly go the other way. Have an older guy with the baseball acumen and then have them, you know, adjust a bit for the analytics. That's the better approach, in my opinion.
All right, I want
to
quickly
what's Tony La Russa doing right now in the dugout?
I have no
clue. He's getting spreadsheets handed to him.
Asinine hire by them. All right, quickly read Johnny just for a flip side on this. Hey guys, love the show. I need help understanding why, with all the calls for Boone's head, no one is talking about getting rid of Cashman. I'm not a, quote, in Cashman we trust guy. It seems like he gets as much wrong as right. Luke Voit is great, but after 4 years of a revolving door of tryouts at first base, he finally hit one. Why does he get so much credit for it? He's had a top three payroll to work with for years, with only one championship of his own, and that team still had the core four. Over the offseason, everyone knew the Yankees needed to get better defensively, diversify the lineup, and acquire a number two starting pitcher behind Cole. I know it's early, but he pretty clearly failed on all of those things. Add in the Devi Hap nonsense in game two versus the Rays, Hicks batting third, Nelson as the recent last minute opener, and things are not, he's not running things well. How come his job is so safe? Please help me understand why he never gets any heat. I mean, certainly he gets less heat than Aaron Boone, but I think he gets his fair share of heat for how this roster is constructed. The fact that they don't have a backup shortstop, the fact that they're all right-handed, the fact that they have no diversity in the lineup, the fact that they haven't been able to develop or assemble a starting rotation for 10 years. I think he gets heat.
Yeah. So these next 2 years are really important, I think, for Cashman's legacy, to be honest. I think that if we're not walking out with a championship, if he doesn't win another one on his side of these guys, if these guys don't get one under his watch, then it's going to be a pretty big failure. It really is. It's going to be, we're going to look and see him very differently. I think he's got to have Boone have success, or we're going to look at him very differently.
All right, Bob, you read the last one from JT. Actually, there's a few more after that I just want to quickly mention, but I found JT's very funny. I want to hear what you guys have to say.
Yeah, so JT said, I've gotten to the point where with this team where everything they do annoys me, even the seemingly innocuous. Literally the way they all walk back to the dugout after putting up non-competitive at-bat after at-bat. Am I alone in this? What are some things they do that bother you guys? AKA like mannerism, facial expressions. Go Yanks. That's what he said.
But not these guys. They are a disgrace. That's the continuation.
Yeah. I just love that, because I think this mailbag came in after after the Wednesday loss to Atlanta. And we were all at this point where it's just like, just looking at their faces annoyed you, because that's how bad they were. So it's just like, well, is there anything when they're going bad? Like I just can't watch Boone like do the sleeve thing like over and over again while he's just like staring and then like pinching his mask and moving it. It's like, are you even paying attention, Boone? Like, there's a guy on first base. He needs to be pinch run for. Are you even paying attention?
Matt Blake drives me nuts because I still don't know what he does.
When he's present
and I see him, like the camera shows him, it annoys the hell out of me. Because I'm just sitting there like, this guy literally has no idea what he's doing. He's walking out. Nobody wants to talk to him. When he's coming out there, like, they're like, come on, Matt. What are you doing? They're not even, they're calling him Marty. They're calling him the different name because he's probably getting stuffed in a locker. He just annoys, his face annoys me. And then at that, to JT's point, it's totally true. you start looking for everything at that point. And it's not that you're looking for it. It just affects you. It just goes into your vision. And then you're looking at anything that looks lackadaisical, like on any level. And I'm screaming at the television, because if it's not going well and they're not running their ass off and I can't see that they're running their ass off and then very mad afterwards, it pisses me off. When I see Gardner like mad in the dugout, like that's it gives me some satisfaction.
If you're not out of breath by the time you've run through first base, you didn't run hard enough.
Yeah.
I tweeted out today too, Gardner striked out and he like cursed, like he like raged really quickly. And then all of a sudden he just goes right back to normal, just walking back casually, like nothing happened. And like, it's not even something that annoys me. It's just like, he goes from 100 to zero, like so quickly. It's just kind of funny.
Yeah, it's like an instant. It's like I can't hold it. I can't contain it. It's like a little release valve. Get it out and then get back to try to be the veteran, like, and making sure everybody's good. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So the last two, I just want to quickly give shout out to. So
Any pausing in the field when you feel the ball? Any delay? What are you doing? Throw the goddamn ball.
Right. This is mental. Mental mistakes are the worst when the team is going bad. If you're making mental mistakes on top of the physical mistakes, on top of swinging at the slider in the other batter's box, like, no, come on. David Lee Acevedo at the Super Ace, he says, on your last podcast, you were talking about whether or not the Nerds have ruined baseball memories. I'm not sure if any of you guys play MLB The Show, but this year they decided to take out the clutch attribute. You were right. Nerds win. I don't play MLB The Show. Bob, do you play MLB The Show?
I have not. I'm trying to get into it though. I'm going to get it. I'm going to get this year's.
So the Nerds have reached video games where they no longer think clutch is a thing. So that's no longer an attribute you can have as a player on MLB.
It used to be like the controller would like shake when there was like a tight pitch and like you could literally feel it. So they were trying to add clutch or take it away from the game player, the player who's actually playing. I don't know if they do that anymore.
Well, I've always said this. Clutch does exist because they're humans. They're not robots. They're not computer programs. So
of course it exists. Anybody who thinks it doesn't exist is a moron.
Yeah. Just because over the course of a season, you might have a 277, you know, whatever it is, in a big moment, in the ninth inning, in a playoff game, you're going to be more tense because it's a bigger situation. That's just human.
Or if you're not, you should be able to, that should be a thing where we identify. Like the fact that you can actually be ice in a moment that's huge is such a telling trait for a player. It really is. Because there are definitely players that shit the moments. Yeah.
Go look at Derek Jeter's regular season stats and his postseason stats, which his postseason stats is basically a full season or more. They're almost identical. What that tells me is that in the biggest moments against the best competition, he performs up to his awesome standard in the regular season. And not everyone can say that. All right, that's the other thing
the Nerds don't say. That you're facing better competition in the postseason. So if you're looking at regular season numbers and purely just basing them on what you would, what transcribes into postseason, it's not that easy. It's not that simple.
The last mentionable
sample sizes.
And it is a homework assignment for Bob, and it's from Tim Watley. I'm assuming you don't get that reference, Bob.
He definitely does not get that reference.
He says, is it within
Is
it within Bob's job description to be required to watch all Yankees-related Seinfeld episodes? Also, remember when the Yankees went 200 games without being shut out and nobody cared? Good times. And yeah, no one did really care that they went that whole streak and didn't get shut out.
I got some shit, too, from my dad for not getting that reference. Like, he listened to the podcast.
Good for your dad.
Yeah. So now...
Maybe we're going to replace you with your dad.
Yeah, maybe you should. No, but now I have to get into Seinfeld now. So
I'm afraid
I'm
that Seinfeld
add that to the watch list.
Yeah,
but I'm wondering even if you watch it, like he may not think
it's
funny.
Give it a shot. I was watching some reruns the other day.
Yeah, even if it's not funny, it just has to happen. I feel like
there's a good amount in the late seasons. There's a good amount of Yankee stuff. So it's like you might get a kick out of some of the Yankee stuff. But Tim Watley, did you watch Breaking Bad?
I have not. I'm 0 for 2 now. 0 for 2 now on podcast shows.
Bryan Cranston, you know who Bryan Cranston is?
The actor from
Breaking Bad. He was also Malcolm in the Middle's dad, a number of other things. He was Tim Watley. He was a dentist in Seinfeld. That's like one of his first acting roles in the biz. was Tim Watley.
I wish I understood. I wish I understood.
Yeah, you got it. It's on Hulu. Go watch some Seinfeld reruns. Jesus Christ.
Maybe I will tonight.
That's going to do it for this week's episode. Definitely much better versus last week at Sunday afternoon. Costanzo from BronxPinstripes.com tweeted out after this game today. He was like, everyone's saying the Yankees are back, but like they're clearly still not back. And I'm like, shit, compared to last Sunday, they look like a love child of the 1927 and 1998 Yankees, because this is actually like baseball. I watched baseball this weekend. I hadn't watched baseball before that.
I will say just quickly, because we didn't touch on it too much, because the guy is just one of these amazing feats, but Gerrit Cole pitching on that on Saturday, just so locked in. And what is it? He's got more 10 strikeout games, or he's right there with Tanaka and somebody else. I forget who it was, I think he's tied for the most in the season. And we're in freaking, we're almost in May. We're not even in May yet. So it's just, he's on another level. The guy is so meticulous. Even you watch, he's looking at the tape after the game, standing there with Higgy. There's definitely something there. And like, because this was exactly what I was hoping for when Cole came over with Gary Sanchez to like level up, and clearly it didn't happen. And he's got that ability with Higgy, but he's a student of the game and he's so meticulous about everything. You got to be on his level. I think it's pretty difficult to be there.
I would like to see next week, because his next start's going to come against Baltimore, right? On Thursday. There's a 4-game series against Baltimore. So
it's a 4-game series, yeah.
The fourth game against Baltimore. Like, it's Baltimore. Just like have Gary Sanchez catch that one.
If I'm Gerrit Cole, here's the other thing that I'm kind of expecting as well. Like, Gerrit Cole is such a perfectionist as well that he's going to want to get right with Gary Sanchez, right? Like, he's going to want to get right, because he knows that there's possible, at the end of the year, who knows? Like, Higgy right now is outshining everybody with the bat. But
highest OPS on the team.
But if he's not, and the world goes back to, relative normalcy, or at least what we're thinking is normal, Gary Sanchez is going to be a bat that we're going to want in the lineup. And if they don't have a rapport in a playoff game, that's a problem. And if I'm Gerrit Cole and I'm a perfectionist and I want to make sure that everything is going right, and I'm doing everything I need to do this season to prepare for the playoffs, getting right with Gary Sanchez is one of them. It should be on his list as well.
I hope so. I've been saying this from the beginning. I hope so. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. We will be back with another episode in a couple days. Talk to you then.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out, or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Why is it that the last dynasty in Major League Baseball were the New York Yankees? And I do recall Brian Cashman was there, yet he lost. He hasn't figured out or remembered how they won. There's a lineup that actually puts the ball in play. Guys who hit 9 drives all over the field that work the count. When you save a metric, it doesn't work.
Look, I don't know what they're doing. Someone has to lose their job at this point. Like, really, this is so... Somebody's got to go. I don't care if it's Cashman, I don't care if it's Boone. Somebody's got to go. That's it. Someone has to go.
I'm going to sleep with a broken heart because of the goddamn Yankees.
Yeah, just one thing. Gleyber Torres is playing baseball for the New York Yankees tomorrow. Aaron Boone is even worse than I think he is right now. That's all. He needs to be benched. Cannot play tomorrow. Or the next day. Or the next day. He needs at least a series off. Have a nice day.
Hey, Pinstripers. This is Eric from Syracuse. And oh, great. Another awesome performance by Tyone. They stake him to a 3-0 lead, and this bum gives up 4 the next inning. I don't care. The only reason he's here is because he's Gerrit Cole's buddy. This guy fucking sucks. Cashman can't evaluate pitchers worth shit. And I hate this team. Bye.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.